Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Julie Tate. Julie is a passionate, award-winning creative person and design system lead with 15 years in design. She lives her life with an attitude of, I can do it. Rooted in a broad educational upbringing and talented role models in the arts, design, and craft disciplines, she's able to leverage divergent thinking and creative problem solving to break through challenges in all aspects of life. Being engaged and open-minded to finding resources as a maker allows her to drive her passion for design systems. In addition to her professional life, Julie is an illustrator, woodworker, potter, teacher, coach, and mother of two. She competes in car racing events and gives back to the sport by being a volunteer coach and advocates for women to get involved with grassroots local racing events. Julie likes to leave you with the question, what is your and, designer and? Julie, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
So, of course, the first question is, what is your and, designer and?
And car racer. I'm an advocate for auto slalom events here in Toronto, Canada. I participate in car racing across South Ontario, all across the province.
I know nothing about car racing other than cars going fast. You said you're going to talk about autocross, which again is a term I have never heard before. What is autocross?
Good question. And I'm happy to share the answer with you. Autocross or auto slalom, the two words can be sort of used in exchange of each other. They are specifically events that are an all forward motion driving skill competition. Each driver is individually timed to the thousandths of a second, very similar in any speed sport, but it's over a short miniature road course that is clearly defined using like traffic cones, like orange pylons. Cars basically compete one at a time. You're classed with other cars of the same nature. So front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, modified, heavily modified, etc. And any event can be just held on a flat paved surface. So we're usually participating in parking lots, large spaces, hopefully not too full of light posts and other objects that would impede our ability to drive through the course. But sometimes they're there and we have to design the course around these objects. So there's lots of, you know, it's an emphasis of driver skill as a result of the space that we have to participate in. And auto slalom just basically teaches us about vehicle handling rather than just straight speed like a drag strip.
Before we dive deeper into the sport itself, how did you get into it?
Well, it brings me back a few years. I guess it was about 2012, there was an interesting job that I had taken upon myself. I was a brand ambassador of sorts, and I was down at an event at the Toronto Princess Gates for the PlayStation Forza game release. And in the parking lot in front of the facility, they opened up the parking lot for an autocross event. My best friend in university told me that her brother was driving in that event. He was, you know, very talented at what he does. And she introduced me to him. And then I guess it was that moment that I planted the seed in my brain, I have to do this. I have to be a active participant of this sport. I can't just watch it anymore. So that following fall, I bought my first rear-wheel drive car. It was a 2013 Scion FRS, and it was an automatic at the time, a transmission. And I just sort of landed at an event that was close to my house, and I was introduced to sort of a small group of men that were also participating there. And they just instantly adopted me into their circle. And they taught me some wonderful tips and tricks in that very first event. And the following spring, I registered for an advanced driving course with the SBDA group. It's actually one of the motorsports clubs that I currently participate in to this day. And I go back and coach myself. So I did this advanced driving course in the spring. I went with my husband and I learned how to handle my car and learn where the braking limits are of your car. When you're initiating your car into sort of a state that breaks the dynamics, you know, you're pitching, you're rolling, you're bouncing, you're twisting, you're kind of losing that control. And that course allowed me to find the limit of my car. And I just had a permanent smile on my face. When you find that limit, I think in any sport, and you can feel that adrenaline rush in your veins, it just makes you want more. And that was sort of 2012, 2013 was the years that changed my life in this sport.
Tell me about that first event that you participated in.
The advanced driving course was more or less the very first event. It was a two-day event. The first day was technical, like learning about handling, about the car's body movements. The second day was sort of a mini autocross event. That sort of geared me up. It gave me the confidence to attend my first scheduled event with a club. So I guess if we go back to that moment that day, I was very intimidating. There was not a lot of representation of women, I guess, around. There was lots of beautiful cars, well-maintained cars, some older cars that, you know, have specifically been crafted to perform well on these type of autocross events. But what I noticed was that there was so much inclusivity, there was so much friendship and camaraderie at this event. It was a hobby that just runs so deep in these folks that they have this urge to share it with others. And it was really unlike any other experience that I had. And it didn't matter whether you were a man or a woman, how old or young you were, you know, the gaps was just so much variety in who was there and who was racing. But the common ground was that you just loved the art of racing and you loved speed and agility and handling and we wanted to compete. That's sort of, that's what brought us all together. And I just remember the feeling at the end of the day when you're all sunburnt and kind of exhausted, a little bit dirty. You got a little bit of rubber, you know, on your skin. It was just, you want more. You just want to go back and when's the next one, you know?
Are cars something that always fascinated you, even before?
That's a good question. So my upbringing, I come from a long line of ladies who do enjoy their vehicles. My Nana actually had a Firebird, I think, can't remember what year it was, but it was somewhere in the 1980s model. And my mom, she had a Camaro. And I remember seeing these old pictures from the 80s of these two cars sitting side by side. And I thought, oh my God, my mom and my grandma are so cool. You know, if I could only be half like them. And I guess, you know, when I look back and reflect on where did I get this urge to participate in car racing, or why do I even like cars? You know, they're so expensive. They cost you money. All you really need, some people's perspective is all you need is a car that gets you from point A to point B. But I couldn't sit with that. That didn't resonate with me too well. So I wanted to feel the push in your seat, you know, that I wanted to feel what it's like to go fast, to find the limits, to also, you know, work on your own car, you know, learn about how to change your tires and take care of your car and you know, keep it healthy, just like, you know, you would yourself if you were participating in the sport. So I found a lot of joy and excitement in that. I just found it like profoundly satisfying to know that I was a part of this culture of people who appreciated cars in the same way that I appreciated cars.
So I know that you are, as your bio says, you are a maker. I know you're a woodworker, illustrator. You like working with your hands. You like to build things and fix things. Is this something that you started doing with the, you know, now that you're part of this sport, is it something that is now becoming a regular thing for you, working with a car, fixing it, tuning it up?
A little bit, yes and no. I do think that there is a boundary that I don't cross. So historically, I have been an avid leaser. I don't buy cars. I just lease new cars. And I enjoy that environment of having something new, having something modern that I can drive, that I can test. And every 2 or 3 years, I just trade it in and, you know, get something new and bring it to the track and see how that car handles. So I really enjoy that piece of it. So as a result of not owning my car, it does put some limits on what I can do to my car. So the only adjustments that I've made to my vehicles in the past have been sort of adding like a sway bar, some stabilization in those front two tires, and sort of these R compound tires. They provide more grip than your just regular street tire that you get, you know, when you buy a new car. And that sort of grip that you have with the pavement and your tire is exactly what allows you to achieve sort of a smooth driving style. It's just critical that you have contact with the ground at all times so that you can navigate the course efficiently when you're going on these tight corners and you're sort of in that high speed environment. So tires is the only thing that I've ever swapped out on my vehicles. It does make a world of difference, but driving style. And I think this is something that I've picked up in the last, you know, 10, 13, maybe 12 years of racing. I remember, again, going back to that first event, I would have, you know, some of these guys come up to me and they'd be drawing pictures of apexes of corners on napkins or like little scrap pieces of paper and telling me that the line that I take into the corner will set me up for the best line out of the corner, which ultimately means you have more tire on the ground, which means you're going to be faster. And they'd always tell me, Julie, smooth is fast, smooth is fast, smooth is fast. And I never really understood what that meant. Being new in that sport, you know, 10 years ago, I was thinking fast is fast. I have to go as fast as possible. And I'm going to just be so heavy on that gas pedal that it's going to make me get to the end faster and I'm going to win. And I had visions of myself winning these events. And the reality of the situation was that I dropped in my rank, you know, well below half of the pack. And I thought, I'm going as fast as I can. Like, what's causing me to fail? And over time, and the only thing that really, you know, makes you get better is more time in the seat. You needed to spend just laps and laps and laps to learn how can I drive more smoothly to get my faster time, you know, and to increase your position in the competition. So over time, yes, I learned that, you know, if you're pitching your car forward and you're sort of generating that longitudinal force, you have to be able to control the levers, or if you're cornering or under a braking and acceleration period and you have that slip of your tires, how do I recorrect that behavior so that I have optimal grip? Again, that patch of rubber on the pavement. And then you have to match that with the speed of your car. So with all these different forces at play and braking and understanding grip, your tires are spinning slightly slower than your car is moving if you're pitching your car forward. So there's all sorts of different scenarios that I've learned over time. I've learned how to manage different scenarios, different factors, such as like alignment and the weight distribution of your car. It just, with the added help of a nice sticky tire, you know, has improved my performance on the track. I just love it. Yeah.
So you said, unlike a regular car race, each car drives separately. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So the structure of these events is such that you have sort of a paddock, which you have your cars parked, and everyone who has the car in the paddock, you're out volunteering. So you get a shift, and your shift is out in the course, and you're looking for things like dropped cones, cones that have been, you know, hit or dragged across the course, you have to make sure you're replacing them. You're also looking for, not an accident, but if a car loses control or spins out and you're sort of manning the radio and you're manning the flags, you have to caution other drivers that there has been something that happened. And, you know, if it's serious, you have to red flag the incident, cars will stop. So you have two positions. So you have the racing group who are sequentially numbered. They'll go one at a time. Sometimes you get, depending on the size of the course, two or three cars out on the track at any given time. The only reason we do this and we space them out accordingly is to move the drivers along throughout the event. Typically, these are, you know, fairly high speed courses, and they're very short and tight. So the cadence of drivers that are released onto the track have to be spaced at an even distance so that there's no hiccups and there's no overlap or, you know, safety concerns at the end of the day. So each course is usually only about, I don't know, I would say 40 to 60 seconds in length. They're very tight, and the handling of your car is very important in the tight cornering scenarios. Sometimes we have these setups called bus stops, and you have to enter and exit. Sometimes you have slaloms, you know, you have to go left, right through a set of pylons, sort of like a snake. Sometimes there's sort of like a figure eight where you have to wrap around and go through a gate. So you want to make sure that you're entering optimally so that you have a nice fast exit. And then at the end of the course, sometimes there are fixed stop boxes. So you have to ensure that your car can safely come to a complete stop so that you can get your time. And sometimes we have like a rolling stop box. You have to slow down enough so such that you've regained control of your car and you can, you know, enter back into the paddock safely. So yeah, it's hard to hard to envision it if you haven't come across it, I guess, in your life. But there are usually, I guess, 100 drivers, sometimes less, sometimes more, depending on the popularity of the club or the weather. But it's a rain or shine event. And, you know, weather does come into play here. If it's a wet, rainy, windy day, pack an umbrella, pack a change of shoes. It does get wet and mucky. But the best part of it is that it's an even playing field for everybody. You know, we're all battling the same conditions, rain or shine, and how we drive and how we optimize how we drive is ultimately going to, you know, get us closer to the top spots for that day. It's very exhilarating when you do compare yourself or you're able to look at others with the same similar setup as you, similar car setup, similar car even, and understand, you know, what did they do that makes them 0.8 of a second faster than me? But, you know, sometimes that 0.8, that tenths of a second, you could have 15 cars, you know, between you and the first person. So every second counts, every tenth of a second counts, every hundredth of a second counts, and we are all fighting for those seconds.
So I find that fascinating because you're on your own on the course. You don't have, you're not racing in real time against other cars, so you don't have that immediate feedback how well you're doing. So once you get on those, you know, that course and you have those 40 to 60 seconds of it's just you and the car on the course, how do you know how well you're doing? Is it something that's even entering your mind?
All the time. I think you get that like white knuckle moment, you know, at the beginning of the race and you're at the start line. We do have some feedback. So at the end of every run, there is a very rudimentary sort of time tracking system that we can log into on our phones that will allow us to track the timing of each run and where you line up to others. So we do have a little bit of feedback. In reality, though, yeah, you are just pushing your limit. You are fighting for those seconds. You don't really know where you land until you land. Over time, I think that becomes, and you know, with the more experience you get, it becomes a little bit easier to understand how competitive you're actually racing in any given event. Yeah, it requires a level of discipline, you know, that being out there, being present, understanding that the only way to get better is to just keep pushing through and keep fighting. You also have a little bit of muscle memory that comes into play. You know, where were my hands positioned when I hit that second corner? Should I change that? You know, or when did I accelerate? Did I hit it when I passed that set of cones? Was it the next set of cones? Was that the right space? You know, should I hold off for another tenth of a second? But the muscle memory does come into play, and you do remember where on the course you need to refine, you know, the handling that you're giving your car so that you can have a quicker time.
Speaking of discipline, how do you separate those races and the driving you do there from everyday driving?
Well, I think the best part of autocross is that you can kind of put your car on edge and run at like a 10 out of 10 with very little to no threat of damaging your car. You can show up with a daily driver to any of these events and feel fairly confident that you're not going to put your car in a position that you're going to roll it over, that you're going to hit something. The wonderful organizers of these events do a really good job of keeping the participants safe, allowing you to hit that 10 out of 10 in a controlled environment. And then you sort of get that out of your system, you know, then you're almost a better driver when you leave at the end of the day, because you know exactly where the limit of your car is. And you do have that discipline to approach the event without going over and without, again, that threat of damaging your car, which is a very real threat, especially when these are the cars that we sometimes pick up our kids in at school and pick up our groceries and, you know, take us to the cottages that we rent for vacations in the summer. So we do want to protect our assets and feel safe doing that. But finding the edge of your car in a safe environment is certainly a factor that I appreciate in this sport.
So you talked about getting interested in it, taking courses, learning advanced driving, starting to race. At what point do you start thinking, okay, I'm ready to coach this?
I think that might be a personal thing, you know, for some of the folks. The experience I've had with the people that I've met have given me the confidence, but also the skills I've gained in other areas of my life have sort of, given me the confidence to share back what I know to the next generation, or just to people who are genuinely interested in finding that, you know, 10 out of 10 limit. I've had the opportunity to buddy up with some senior instructors in the past. I've got to drive along, you know, be a passenger with some coaches, some people that I really admire in the sport, and I've learned from them. I think that ability to buddy up with people, especially the more experienced instructors, allows you to see where they push hard, not too hard, just hard enough. Because remember, smooth is fast. This is my mantra. But to allow us to see how they handle their cars when there isn't, you know, traffic. We have this dedicated course. When do they switch gears, for example? When do they allow second gear to just hit that rev limiter and, you know, resist the urge to go into third? There's so many intricacies that you come across just through experience and through these ride-alongs that it's equipped me with the confidence now, you know, being 10 years into the sport, that I am equipped to offer that same advice back to others. And, you know, you're always humbled when you get into a car that you sort of have this expectation of how you think it's going to perform. And some of them are beautiful, you know, well-equipped race cars. But just because you have the car doesn't mean that you can be the driver, right? Like you know your limit, that you're confident in figuring out your threshold braking or the right understanding oversteer or understeer if you're going into figure eights and simple exercises. And some of these exercises are the ones that are reflected in this advanced driving course. But to empower someone with that confidence is so rewarding. And I just absolutely love it. But it's also this guilty pleasure that you want the sport to grow and you want these people to fall in love with it and share the same passion that you have. And I think that's also what keeps me coming back, because I just genuinely want to see success for this sport in Canada specifically in southwestern Ontario. The sport is fairly small. There is a tight-knit group of folks that are active participants. Down south in the United States, there's, you know, the events are tenfold. And I think at some point in my life, I would love to get down there and participate. There are some groups from Canada that go down and have a lot of fun doing these sort of five-day events, whereas we'll have, you know, one day on a Saturday. So the culture is just, yeah. It's amplified down in the United States. But for what we have here in Canada and the accessibility we have to this sport, more or less, you know, 1 to 2 hours away from your house, it pays itself back with the bigger smile on your face at the end of a Saturday. It's just a lot of fun.
You mentioned earlier that when you joined the sport, it was predominantly male presence. Tell me more about your desire to grow the sport. How are you bringing more women and non-male people into it?
Yeah, this is a particularly challenging topic, right? Because we naturally, I think, as you know, and there's lots of women in motorsports. I think any type of motorsports, whether it's car racing, autocross, even female mechanics, you know, people who are well-versed in working on their cars. I think there's lots of women that do exist, and I applaud them. What I've noticed is that I'm usually one of five women in these events in southwestern Ontario. There are, and the women who go are you know, wonderful friends of mine now, and they've coached me, and we've learned a lot from each other, and it doesn't really faze us, I think. It doesn't faze me. I shouldn't speak on behalf of everyone, but it doesn't faze me that we are the, you know, very much so minority of this sport. I advocate for women to get out and do this type of sport because we are driving our kids everywhere. You know, we are chauffeurs for our family members. We, you know, friends, families, the friends of our kids. We often pick them up and we're driving on highways. We're driving in, you know, down the street, whatever the case, whatever the distance, anything can happen on the road at any time. You know, we can only control the actions of ourselves on the road. So why not equip yourself with the skills to handle your car safely when you're carrying the most precious cargo in your life? So I think there's lots of transferable skills that you would learn in this advanced driving scenario that would be able to be applied to just day-to-day driving. Confidence behind the wheel is something that I noticed a lot of women don't have, and it has absolutely no relation to the confident people they might be in their day-to-day lives, in their jobs at work. But something about the weight of a vehicle, the speed of a vehicle, the handling of a vehicle, you know, whether it's a beautiful sunny day or the weather is poor and it's slippery out from the rain. There's so many different scenarios that, again, the transferable skills you could learn in these high speed, tight handling courses would give confidence and would pay you back in reaps and rewards to give you the confidence that you need. So I haven't formally, you know, advocated, but it's something that means so much to me. So in conversation with my friends and peers, I will always share a little bit about this part of my life with them and encourage them to say, hey, if you have an open Saturday, you know, come on out, jump in the car with me. I'm going to show you what this is all about. The reality of the situation is that we often have, you know, children in tow. And now at this stage of my life, I do have two of my own. And I'm finding that I have to bring them to events with me because I can't just leave them at home. So if my husband and I will be out on a Saturday, we will end up switching sort of this babysitting, you know, of our children while we want to do what mommy and daddy want to do. And there's some others, you know, that we race with that are also very family oriented people. And these are the people that we, you know, naturally connect with at the events and we'll start, you know, sharing space in the paddock with other children. But the reality of the situation is we are all busy. You know, our kids now get involved in events and lessons that take places on Saturdays, and typically these events also take place on Saturdays, so that there's a huge competition for just who gets what hobby this weekend. And it becomes a scheduling nightmare sometimes. So I think, and that could go both ways, you know, it's a man or woman thing, but I think it does tend to fall a little bit heavier on the women. So it does make it challenging, you know, the scheduling piece. But the confidence piece, something that means a lot to me, I truly do want, you know, women to come out to try these events. It's a very low commitment. It's a very easy entry into the sport of autocross and just advanced driving that I think could benefit everyone.
Other than your own confidence behind the wheel, how else has autocross benefited you?
Oh, in so many ways. The social skills you learn, the reaction you have on the main road to anything that happens. You just lose, instead of losing control, you gain control, and you have that those sort of skills to just get you out of a sticky situation. You also sort of, how do I say, when you're taught about the like weight transfer of your car when you have sudden directional changes, to have that sort of quick hands to recorrect or catch a slide, you know, this could translate into winter driving, right? And you do lose grip with the ground because you're on black ice. Sometimes all of these skills that we have gained on the track relate just perfectly to real life driving. But more so than the driving, and I guess it's in addition to the confidence, you learn to be calm in a high-risk situation. You learn that you can't control what others do. You can only control what you do. And you learn that participating in an autocross event, there's sort of two parts of your day. You know, one part is giving back and being on the track and being a marshal and helping others have a safe day. And then you have the part where you're in control and you have to now step up to the plate, calm your own nerves. Sometimes I don't even know if I breathe for those 45 seconds when you're on the track. It's like you have to self-regulate a little bit through that competition mode. And I think that self-regulation will come back into, you know, the work that we are doing in our day jobs as well. There's lots of transferable skills. I think it's such a pleasant environment where the camaraderie of the people that we race with, just it's certainly one of the best parts for sure.
That's incredible. Julie, where can people find you?
Well, I have an Instagram. It's a cross between my race life and my family life. It's Mayday JT, and LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn at Julie Tate. And yeah, happy to connect. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This was fascinating.
Oh, happy to share. Have a good day.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.